It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go, take a look at the 5 and 10. It's glistening once again with candy canes and silver lanes that glow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. A pair of hop-along boots and a pistol that shoots is the wish of Barney and Ben. Dolls that'll talk and we'll go for a walk is the hope of Janice and Jen. And Mom and Dad can hardly wait for school to start again. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go, there's a tree in the Grand Hotel, one in the park as well. It's the sturdy kind that doesn't mind the snow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Soon the bells will start, and the thing that'll make them ring is the carol that you sing right within your heart. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. Sure, it's Christmas once more.
Oh yeah, it's Christmas once more. It's that time of the year. And my name is Bill, and I'm here with my lovely wife, Kathy.
Hello, how y'all doing?
And we're here with Families and Recovery, working with City of Angels in a radio program that we do. We've been doing it for 2.5 years now.
Yes, two and a half years.
All kinds of programs out there. Visit coanj.org, get you to City of Angels' main page. You can find us on Facebook. And there's a ton of shows out there, not only ours, but a whole bunch of other shows. Well, welcome aboard today at City of Angels. I have a few people around to chit-chat with and some more coming in. We're just ad-libbing as we're going on. Our topic today is surviving the holidays. When we think of Christmas holidays, right, you got that beautiful song and you think it is rosy, nice, perfect picture of the holidays and the families. And those of us in addiction or associated with addiction realize that that's not always true and that we have chaos going around us. And so we're here to talk reality and how can we survive the holidays and make the best out of it.
So right now City of Angels is having their Christmas holiday party downstairs, and Santa Claus is going to be coming, and so
yeah,
you know,
3 o'clock, Santa's coming. Come on down to where are we at, Art? Right,
we're at 125 South Main Street at the First Baptist Church in Hightstown.
There you go. Yeah. Get up, get out of that chair. Come on, get up, move it, get to the car. Let's go. We'll see you in 10 minutes. So anyway, right now we have Beth and Ben with us. You're on the air, Ben, live. How old did you say you were, Ben?
I said I was 10 and a half.
10 and a half. Wow. Welcome aboard, Ben. And Mom, Beth, you said you just found out about City of Angels about 4 months ago.
Yeah, I just learned about City of Angels about 4 months ago, and I'm just want to show up and be a part of and support in any way that we can, and we love it.
Yeah, thank you very much. And you're also a recovering addict?
I'm a recovering alcoholic, yeah.
Alcoholic from 1991, you said you have sobriety. Congratulations.
Yeah. So
that's fantastic.
Quite a few years.
You recollect back that far? It's been 25. That's fantastic.
That's really great. Congratulations.
Can you share a couple minutes about how, first of all, how, you know, in the beginning, how you made that break? So people, I always want addicts to know how they can make a break.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So if you could say, yeah, this is what happened. I mean, we don't have a lot of time to do an hour show on just yours, but you understand. And then maybe if you have any thoughts about the holidays, what you remember from the holidays.
Sure. So, from my past, I didn't really have good holidays growing up. Mm. For me, I always thought that, you know, the way the music is and the way the holidays are and the lights and everybody was supposed to feel cheery and love. I was under the impression that if you were going to feel love at any part of the year, it was going to be Christmas. And I didn't have that ability.
Yeah.
You know, drugs and alcohol were the only thing I understood. And so I didn't experience love. So the holidays weren't really fun for me. And
so you started addictions really early?
Yeah. Very, very early. So, but I got, when the first Christmas that I was sober, I went to a lot of alkathons, and I was very lucky to be surrounded. I was 17. Okay. I was 18 by Christmas, mm-hmm. and I was a senior in high school, and I was very fortunate to be surrounded by a lot of people in recovery that were younger, mm-hmm. that could, you know, wanted to stay out. So we would go to the diner till 2 o'clock in the morning. Went to alcathons, and we kind of
had some young kids that interacted with you that helped you move away from using.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Yes, and I also belonged to a 12-step program, so.
Okay.
That for me was, you know, we would go to, you know, there were meetings, kind of like 24 hours worth of meetings.
That's
so we would
awesome.
Spend time in meetings and mm-hmm. then go to the diner and go back to a meeting and spend a little bit of time with family and then go back to a meeting.
So was it a clean break? Do you remember anything about that break? Was there any
like
challenges?
Like, what made you decide, you know? Yeah. Like,
oh, I didn't decide.
No.
I was completely beyond human aid.
Okay.
So for me, it was removed.
Okay.
And although not easy the first couple of years, mm-hmm. especially around the holidays, you know, it was about being a part of, being of service to other people, doing things for other people, and making other people's holidays happy.
Okay. So what you're saying is, because I'm a firm believer, you do have to insert, if you're an addict and you have a habit, you need to insert and create new habits. And that's what you're saying.
I
create new habits by hanging around with this young kids, a little younger than me and my age, and did positive things. Went to meetings, did something. And in addition to that, I then instituted into my life a ministry, outreach, helping others, creating a good... And Ben, since Mom's been in sobriety and is not drinking alcohol, so, have you had a good Christmas?
Yeah.
Have you had quite a few good Christmases?
Yes.
See, people out there, you want to embrace sobriety because then your children are going to love you and have a great Christmas. I love Christmas too.
Yeah.
But also as a young kid, I had some negative experiences with Christmas also.
I mean, I think it's pretty remarkable that, you know, at that young age you decided or whatever happened to help you get in recovery and then you just grabbed it. For a 17, 18, 19-year-old to realize the gift that they'd been given for recovery and then for you to want to give it to others, I know that's part of step 12, but for you to just do that at that age was quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And I still do that now. I mean, now... We do the holidays for the kids, we make magic for the kids and
enjoy it.
Dan, you know, Ben is an incredibly giving person, and he's all about helping others.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Terrific.
Giving. Yeah, I agree.
Both of my kids came to me. They apparently had a powwow, mm-hmm. A meeting amongst themselves, and came to me the other day and said we would really like to go down to one of the inpatient facilities and bring people presents for Christmas. So
it's amazing.
I feel really blessed that I have two kids that on their own want to think of others and how to be of service to others.
Yeah, so Ben, how does it make you feel when you think about helping other people and then you go ahead and help them? How is that different from getting your own gifts?
It's different because you want to think about others before you think about yourself. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be selfish.
Wow.
So it teaches you not to be selfish.
Yeah.
Because we all like to get things.
Yeah.
I like to get things, but it does teach me that, you know what, there's other people out there with needs. and I could bless them, and then I feel good that I gave something.
Yeah,
and
so do
I,
you
still get some things.
So you enjoy seeing how happy it makes them, right? And then that makes you happy.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, that's really good. Are there some suggestions you could give, like newly recovered people that are just in recovery this holiday season? You know, some tips you could give them about how to stay clean and how to get through the holidays?
Oh, yeah. You know, be in touch with your network. Mm-hmm. You know, prayer every morning, right? Nightly inventory at night, meditation in the morning. And only just, you know, I think it's really kind of dead. Our senses are deadened to it, but it's really just today. Just get through today. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the number one thing, there's lots of logistical things you can do. If you have like large family functions that you have to go to with the cousins and the uncles and the aunts and the step uncles and all the people, you know, thank God for Uber. But if you have your own transportation, always try to park so that you can't get blocked in, so that if you're having a rough time, you can leave. The gift of pause, right? Before Uncle Joe, you know, before you blast Uncle Joe for all the completely inappropriate things he's about to say, pause. You know, always have your phone on charge, you know, have your support network at your fingertips at all times, and let your network know, hey, I'm going to this at this time. I'm going to be there till this time, and kind of just text with people in between and be like, it's not going okay. It is going okay.
Same thing. You could have a friend check in after an hour, call you in an hour.
Absolutely.
To say, how you doing?
And I think the number one thing for any event at any time of year, especially the holidays, is ask yourself, what can I bring to these people? What can I do for these people? And I know as the addicted population is you know, as an alcoholic, you know, I'm innately selfish, and I'm always trying to think of what I can get out of something. Mm-hmm. So anytime I go to an event, I what can I bring? What can
Beautiful.
I do? What can I do for you? And as Ben put it, you know, what can I do for others? And it makes me feel good when I can do things for other people.
That's awesome.
Very good.
That's
awesome. I think of another little tip that you were mentioning. Another one would be is have a glass of soda in your hand or water or seltzer water.
Right, and never put it down.
Don't
put it down.
Yeah, that way nobody's gonna ask you if you need a drink.
Yep.
You don't have to refuse. I have something right here, so that's very good.
And then
good.
Another one that we were thinking about is like you sit down at a table and your mother says, you know, have you ever tried Weight Watchers? I really like the pause.
Just don't
even engage
anything.
In it. Don't even get sucked into it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that is so calling you right in to get sucked in.
Oh, yeah.
So pause and just like, thanks for sharing, Mom. And walk away or something.
Walk away, man.
You have to have a strategy.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned some of the strategies.
Yeah.
Christmas is a very difficult time of the year. It really is for some people. It's not all cheery, and a lot of people put a facade on. What I like to say to people, and again, we're addicts because I'm using to cover up my pain, my hurt, things that might have traumatized me as a child, or it could be from genetics. So you have these reasons to end up using, and it covers a lot of emotions. And to turn around, and what I say to myself now, as I'm also in recovery, it doesn't have to be one or the other. These part of ourselves coexist. I'm allowed to carry pain. And this is what very interesting. I gave a speech last week or the week before last. And I mentioned to them that because of this world that we live in, there's pain.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of running from it, if you look at it and say, it's going to be a tough one to say, it's my privilege to carry it.
Mm-hmm.
See, what I say is this, if you understand this, God, my higher power, the Bible says Jesus was a man of sorrows, mm-hmm. but he was always given to others. But he was a man of sorrows, so he knew what pain was, but yet he still gave. He mm-hmm. still participated in life. It didn't shut him down. So if God could come through life and try to minister and help people and see them fail, and so he had the pain of seeing that loss of a loved one who overdoses. In his case back then, it was other reasons they were dying. But he was losing them. He carries that pain. Then we have the privilege of understanding how God feels when he loses them.
Mm-hmm.
See, what I say to people, I say, okay, so you love your addict in your life, whether it's your spouse, a child, or a friend. How much more does God love?
Mm-hmm.
Because really, our love only goes so far. See, I love my wife very much because I've now spent 40 years with her, and we are very bonded and connected. I love you as the next rung out or next rung out. My neighbor, a little rung out, but then the guy down the street and the town over. Truthfully, I don't love. I mean, I could say I love. I probably would care for him to some extent, but I don't have the mm-hmm. love connection I have here.
Right.
What I say to people, take your love for your family and then put it to the whole world because God loves them all. Mm. And more than we can even love each other.
Yeah.
You see? And so we could go through life carrying pain and say, it's okay. So I could go mm-hmm. into the Christmas season. Come on in. We could go through the Christmas season and say, you know what? I carry pain. I carry pain from my loss. I carry pain from my childhood. It's okay. Mm-hmm. That itself won't kill me. I'm allowed to feel sorry or sad. And at the same time, I could turn around and say, I love being with Art and Kathy and Beth. And this is nice sitting back and just enjoying each other. So I can enjoy this moment. And you know what? I have that little pain that sits here in my heart. That doesn't hurt me. I could carry my pain. And it's something that we could carry through life and say they both coexist. It doesn't have to be one or the other. You see?
So, Kath, what are you thinking? Since you just found City of Angels, you know, and you're kind of new, what would you hope to, you know, bring the City of Angels? Because I'm sure that they need various different kind of help and all.
Anything we can.
Okay, that's awesome.
Anything so. We can. We mm-hmm. we want to be a part of. So that's whether excellent. It's sponsoring events or being yep. a part of events or. Mm-hmm. Whatever they asked us to do, mm-hmm. we love it here.
There you go, so Art. We have her on a hot seat. Now I just got to think yeah. of stuff
just start asking, Art. Just start asking.
Actually, it's Christmas. Very helpful in all of our events. And
oh, that's awesome.
Awesome. Sign here. Her up.
That's terrific. That's Sign terrific. Well, thank you so much for sharing. That's yeah. awesome. Yeah,
thanks absolutely. For letting us be here with you guys.
Oh, yeah. yeah. Absolutely. So are there anybody in Dana's, our audience?
Dana's not here yet.
Yeah.
Stacy's not up here yet.
Anybody else okay. want to get interviewed over there?
No, nope, just listening.
Up.
Okay.
Just listening.
All right. Yeah. You just watch and listen.
All right. Because we're
Then we're going to talk while we wait for Stacy, Dana to come on up and talk to us. Mark, I invited up. We're just going to talk some of the things that we understand, and Beth mentioned some of for surviving the holidays, because we're all out there, and it can be chaotic. One thing is that we, in the holidays, it's almost like we keep secret
of our
problems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like we're almost like ashamed mm-hmm. that, you know, my spouse has a problem, my child has a problem, a friend has a problem with addiction, and we're almost like ashamed, and there's a secret mm-hmm. going on mm-hmm. in the family.
And shame.
And shame. That,
and shame.
Well, shame comes with it,
yeah,
and I feel
because,
shame.
Because, you know, you're afraid to talk, you know, to other people because you're thinking that they might not understand what you're going through, and there's still this awful taboo about, you know, addiction, and it's just so hard, and yet there's so many of us struggling out there with friends and family who are addicts, and so we need to stop having secrets and start sharing with other people.
Yeah, there's no shame that says that I have a problem or my you know, I have a problem in the family.
Yeah.
There's no shame to it. Is life. It is reality. What am I sticking my right now when I went downstairs, you know, I went to a table. I said, hey, how you doing? What's your association with City of Angels? That's funny. I say, so any of you recovering addicts, you know, it's almost like I'm asking a taboo question. That's right now down there. It's yeah. almost like I feel like I'm not supposed to ask.
Yeah, and
it's
we're
like,
here in the
Who
program.
Told me I'm not supposed to ask?
Right. Yeah.
But it is in the back of our heads. Like, we're not allowed to talk about reality.
Yeah.
Let's pretend that everything is okay. No. Now, at the same time, I'm not going to go to a neighborhood party and just stand up and say, I just want everybody to know that my husband's an addict here. That would be a little shaming on him.
No, you want to seek out some, you know, really safe, close friends that you have and risk sharing a little bit and see how that goes. And then you may find out a lot of times nowadays what we find out is when you do start to share, then, you know, they have somebody they know who's an addict and, you know, so it's not so uncommon. And
yeah, you're
you
not
might,
isolated
You might
any
end
longer.
Up have somebody, yeah.
Yeah, because a secret keeps you isolated.
Yeah,
and you know
exactly.
you're not really isolated anymore.
Yeah, definitely.
What else? Oh, giving up hope.
Can you I really like this one. So
Give up hope.
You know, yeah, give up hope, exactly. Because during the holidays, we have all these high hopes that something's going to, you know, that it's going to be like what we dreamed it would be at Christmas time. And one of my favorite lines just in life in general is, lower our expectations. Because, and here's one of the lines I like to do is, God grant me the ability to change the things I cannot accept. Is that?
Yeah.
Is that
Did
right?
you hear what she said? Say it again.
God grant me the ability to change the things I cannot accept.
Give me the ability to change the things I cannot accept. You're
is
right.
Is that how that goes?
I don't think that's the way it goes, but I think that's what we end up doing.
So I think we go into the Christmas season, you know, thinking we're going to have everybody, you know, kind of do what we want them to do. So
we
you
get
know,
this unrealistic expectation, yeah. this image, this hope. Yeah. I hope everything goes fine.
Yeah, right.
And then your addict comes home, you know, or the police bring your addict home right in the middle of your party. Yeah. And your hopes are dashed.
Yeah. So one of the things we suggested is before you all get together with your relatives and everything, sit for a few moments and acknowledge what you wish they were like. And then prepare for what they probably are like, because that's going to be a more realistic. And if you keep your expectations low, what I've found in my own life, when you keep your expectations low, people end up surprising you because you're not expecting anything. So they actually end up, you know, saying or doing a few things that are kind of like, oh, that was a nice blessing.
Right,
because you're not expecting much. So
yeah, why do we set ourselves up, right? Why do I expect my addict not to come home and act out, or not to come home high, or not, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, well, they've shown you over and over and over in the past their behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
But somehow in our head, and then listen to this, then we're all upset.
Right. Right.
Look at what you've done to my party.
Correct.
You've wrecked the party.
Thanks again, Beth and Ben.
Yes. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ben. Have fun.
Okay.
See what I'm saying? Because I had this hope that it was all going to go fine. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's almost like I've created a delusional state in my own head.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm setting myself up for this to happen. So like you said, so I look at, we're going to have the party, and you know Uncle Tommy's always oogling the girls. You know that your nephew gets drunk and he jumps up on the table. You know that, you see what I'm saying? So this is what happened the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Now, we could address, though, what a healthier response to those.
Right.
See, instead of having this expectation or hope that everything will be rosy, that the uncle won't oogle and the nephew won't get up on the table and dance, past history tells us they will.
That they're going to do it, yeah.
So we have to change the way we're going to relate to those events.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because I turn around and say, oh, you wrecked my party. So that means I had this high expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, how am I going to react? And so we talk about setting boundaries.
Yeah, definitely.
Healthy boundaries. To start this, I'm going to give you justification, because a lot of people don't like boundaries, because a lot of people don't like confrontation. I don't want to have a conflict with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to. Oh, it makes me nervous. When I was a manager in the office, I'd have the supervisor come in and they'd share what happened. I said, yeah, you're going to have to address that. And they're like, oh, do I have to do that?
Exactly.
I tell them, look, I don't like confrontation any more than anybody else. And I didn't. I didn't like confrontation as a manager, but I will do what I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? That is my responsibility. It's your responsibility to set the healthy boundaries in your life to take care of yourself.
Exactly.
And so, again, going back to this theme, which came out in the very opening, was both worlds can exist.
Mm-hmm.
The world exists that I don't like confrontation, but I will do it.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
whereas
definitely.
A lot of people say, I don't like confrontation, so I kind of do other acts that don't set healthy boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? I'll walk away. I'll just walk away. I'll go in the other room.
Mm-hmm.
Meantime, the nephew's now got his clothes off on top of the table. And the uncle's got the girl on her lap.
Yeah.
So, because I didn't want to address the confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
See, and so I want to give you some ammo. Again, remember, we're always looking for our power outside of ourselves to bring us to sanity. Well, here's the story. Ready for this? The biblical story is in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve were there, and they violated a rule. What did God do to Adam and Eve? Kicked them out of the garden. This was God. And God says, no, you will not further violate this sanctuary, this Garden of Eden. You will no longer violate it. You're out. We all think, as parents, and especially as mothers, because you've got that normal bonding with your child, this is too hard for me. This is unloving. No, it is not unloving to say, mm-mm, you will not violate this house. My addict comes staggering home and in the middle of my party, tripping over the front step and barely getting in the door. It's like, no. I'm sorry. I love you. I care for you. But you're not going to come in and violate this house.
You could explain to them that by their coming home that way, they've chosen to not be a participant of that
situation. Instead of making it about you being the bad person, say that again. You're making it.
They've made a decision that they didn't want to participate in that particular function because of the way they came home.
Do you hear that? It's putting the onus on them. No, this ain't about me being a bad parent. No. My love doesn't change for you. My love's the same. I love you this much, but I'm not going to allow you to come in here and violate this sanctuary. My house is my sanctuary. This is my sanctuary. This is my company. I'm not going to allow you to violate art. Or you see what I'm saying? No. I love you. You don't love me. No, it's okay. Thank you very much. It's all right. Go away. When you get sober, you come back home. And that's what God said to Adam and Eve. If you turn around and you have the right relationship with me, reestablish this relationship and begin healthy practice, then you'll be braced and come back into the family.
Yep.
So we got that spiritual basis to empower you to say, no. Stop, again, this dualism. Stop equating love with the setting of the healthy boundaries that we say they can't exist together. No, they can. I love you and you're not allowed in my house.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. There's, I don't have to feel guilt about that. I don't have to feel shame. I may have concerns, which is a parental thing. I may have concerns. He could go out there and get hit by a car. He could go out there and overdose. They're legitimate. Again, they still exist. My love doesn't change. I'm setting a healthy boundary. And yes, that could be a possible outcome. And that's the pain I carry with me in my life. I carry that pain, that concern with me, and I'm going to enjoy my company. Because I still know I love them. I'm going to trust them to the higher power. What goes from here? What are you thinking? What's the next thing on your...
Well, I was wondering, did you want to get interviewed?
Where's Dana? She isn't here yet.
She'll be right back. She just went to go get the kids.
Okay.
She'll be back. She's on her way already.
Okay.
All right. Are you somebody who likes to talk? I forget your name.
Yeah, would you guys like to be interviewed?
Yeah, I'll be interviewed.
They want to... listen, come on up.
Yeah.
Come on up.
Can I take a nice picture of you
today? Oh, please. Sure. Yep. Sure.
Happy holiday.
Yeah, happy holiday. Thank you.
Here you go. Swing over here, Art.
I'm the photographer.
Oh, that's okay. Wonderful. That's awesome. Good.
There you go.
Yeah, get one of the audience,
the audience
too. Yeah.
And we're glad you're here.
Yeah. Thanks for coming up.
All right, and we're glad our audience is here. Thank you.
This makes it enjoyable.
And I've been watching eye contact. I see you're getting into it.
Yeah,
so,
thank you.
That's good.
Yeah, and you come on up anytime.
Yeah,
you
come up, talk, ask questions,
please,
whatever you want
to
do. Nancy would
share.
Love to have some
come
company
on,
go sit next to
anybody. We want to ask questions. So
it's calling you.
Yeah.
So Nancy?
Yes.
Yeah. So Nancy, so in your relationship to City of Angels and to life, are you a recovering addict? Are you a family of addict? Anything?
Family.
Family.
Yeah, my daughter is in recovery, and my son passed away about 18 months ago.
Oh,
I'm sorry for that loss. Carry the pain. So you carry your pain. You'll never get rid of it. You carry it. You embrace it. This is my love for my son as I carry that pain. You don't have to take drugs to dampen it. You don't have to pretend it's not there.
Right.
It doesn't mean we can't enjoy each other's company and have a good time right here, even if I carry that little pain with me and a lot of pain at time. So
share a little bit about yourself and your progress and your process of having addicts, you know, as loved ones, and how you've become the healing.
Where you're at today? How have you gotten to where you're at?
And the ability for you to live today and to deal with all of what you've gone through.
Right. And when my son, he started when he was like 12. He was in his first first rehab at 12.
Wow.
And he passed, he was 35, so.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Long battle.
My daughter's been in and out, but she was never as bad as him. She drank a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And my ex is a recovering alcoholic. Well, now he's not recovering, but he was a recovering alcoholic.
Oh, wow.
If that's what you call it. But,
So what's been your process?
Yeah, what's been your process?
But you're not an addict?
You've never.
But you. Parents?
Depends who you talk to. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My daughter says I'm not because mm-hmm. I stopped just... Stopped, but
yeah.
She's a child of the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Oh, you were a party animal in the 60s.
Yeah. Late 60s, yeah. Early 70s.
Okay.
But yeah.
So again,
but I was faced with a choice. I could either continue doing what I was doing and lose my kids.
Oh, wow.
Or stop, and mm-hmm. I chose to just stop. So my daughter says because mm-hmm. I could just choose to stop on my own, I'm not.
Right,
addict,
right,
so.
And that's
not necessarily true.
Right,
right, yeah.
It depends.
Well,
you had a great incentive.
On your sobriety.
So I lived it, and then you know I married an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And, that was hell.
Wow.
Yeah. And what are some of the things you remember around the holiday times? That's your struggle when you had your husband home and the addiction was in full blown. What do you remember?
You know, sometimes it was good, sometimes it wasn't. He was very abusive, verbally and emotionally mm-hmm. and a little physically until I locked him up.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, were you able to set boundaries? Because a lot of people struggle with what we're just talking about here mm-hmm. Because that conflict with, especially a mother, that motherly love for their family and child conflicts in their heads with setting healthy boundaries. I can't do that because you know they won't love me or they'll think I don't love them.
Yeah. So did you?
Well, I was very young when I got married, so yeah. I didn't know any better. Mm-hmm. But like I said, he was physical. So once I had him locked up, and he mm-hmm. had no choice but to quit drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Although he
mm-hmm.
never changed, he just stopped mm-hmm. consuming.
Yeah.
It was easier to just to go let him do his own thing, and I just lived for my kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then, like you're saying,
so you
about
set a healthy boundary.
Yeah,
you got him
sort
locked
of.
Up. You said no, we're not taking this anymore.
Right.
Okay. Congratulations,
so,
you did it.
Thank you. And then I walked out, but not until 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
So did you get in
a slow learner?
Very slow. I mean, my kids begs, leave, yeah, and I just, yeah. I don't know, but, you know.
So did you surround yourself with anybody that could support you and help you? Like, did you go to any meetings, or did you find other people, or, like?
I did not.
Mm-hmm.
My kids,
okay.
And their, you know, they were my life.
Yep, mm-hmm.
You know, my mom, I always had my mom until she had a stroke,
mm-hmm.
and then I lived for my
kids.
Kind of
goes back to what Beth was saying, because Beth was saying that she began to look outside of herself. Mm-hmm. Remember, she said, I started ministering to others and creating joy and happiness in her life. And what you said is, you know what? I turned from that, and I said, let me give mm-hmm. my energy to these children and raise them in a healthy, proper way. Yeah, as best as I
could. I probably messed them up by staying. I mean, I'll always feel guilty for that.
Yeah.
Well, but you know, you did the best you could while you were going through it, and you eventually did take care of yourself and your kids. So, you know, we all do the best we can as we're going along.
Right. Now you look back, you say, yeah, I wish I would have left early. Mm, yeah, I wish I would have got up yesterday and I didn't, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that the past is the past. It is our choices. And sure. So for those, matter of fact, if we could use your story then, because you're saying, that's something that I have to live with, that I didn't do it sooner.
Right.
You would encourage somebody to maybe do it a little sooner.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
If you're out there mm-hmm. right now listening mm-hmm. to this, and you hear Nancy's story here about the abuse that's going on in the house from the addict in your life, she's saying, don't wait. Don't wait 10, 15 mm-hmm. years of that abuse, because it does impact the children. It really does.
People say, I stayed for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I should have left for the kids.
Really
and
important.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's really important for audience
Again,
to hear.
You know, we look back at these, what are we going to call them, paradigms, the way we believe in life. Like I've been mm-hmm. talking about these dualisms that we live with, but we want to deny we live with them. And that's one of them, loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place for loyalty, but not at the expense of our children.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
It wasn't so much loyalty. I was a stress eater, so ate and ate and ate and ate, and I weighed almost 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
I always
mm-hmm.
heard, you know, you're fat, you're lazy, you can't live without me.
You need me. I got you.
And then you start to believe mm-hmm. it. So I didn't go anywhere until mm-hmm. I made the decision that I can't. I just can't. My son was out doing what he was doing.
Yeah.
Yep.
I couldn't take care of him. I couldn't take care of me. So I decided I had gastric bypass. And then mm-hmm. once I lost the weight.
So was there anything that made that click? Even though, like you said, all right, it took me so many years to finally come to it, was there an event that took place? Because sometimes people use a catalyst.
Yeah, I don't know. No? People ask me that all the time. Mm-hmm. I just decided one day I was going to do it. I didn't tell anybody. Mm-hmm. I didn't tell him. I didn't tell my kids. I didn't tell my boss.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I went first and I did all the pre-things that you have to do. And then I said, okay, like and this day I'm having surgery and that's that.
Well, you know, I think it's important because it is somebody coming to a place in life that says, I'm sick of it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that in itself was its change. I had a buddy who I call curls up and goes in his man cave. So he deals with some depression. He goes up, he goes down, he goes up. And when he goes down, he curls up in his man cave somewhere for a week or two. And he's the one who came up and just said to me, he says, you know, I just realized that I'm sick of it. And therefore, I got to take action. So that was his motivation. He finally says, I'm sick of it. Well, it takes somebody 5 years, 8 years, 10 years, 12 years.
30 years.
30.
A lifetime.
Not saying anything, 30 years.
Yeah, let me ask her.
Go ahead.
So for our listening audience, you know, you've gone through a very difficult situation with losing your son. Mm-hmm. Could you give the audience a little bit of insight about how you've chosen to put one foot instead of the other every day and going on?
Well, I have a daughter who's still here.
Yes.
And I live for her.
Yes.
My son had a girlfriend who has his daughter.
Oh.
And three of her other kids that I kind of inherited.
Yep.
I get out of bed for them.
That's awesome.
So between the two girls and the five grandkids, that's what I live
for. That's what you live for. And then plus you did a good job by taking care of yourself also. And, you know, getting healthy again and everything. So... Yeah, it's not an easy thing to do to lose a son.
Right.
And I hate this time of year.
Yes.
I thought last year was bad, but I think
what do you hate about this time of year?
I'm just sad. I'm just sad. My son loved Christmas.
He did.
He was so funny, and I just miss that.
Yeah. So you really miss that.
I don't even have my tree up yet, but I know I have to because of the grandkids. Right. But
Yeah.
That's that world. You carry the pain with you as you're in this present. Yeah, and that pain, I don't believe it goes away. We'll always carry because you always love your son. It's always going to be there. It may get a little less eventually, but, that's your badge.
Yeah.
That's your badge.
And, I mean, as far as your son, man, he struggled for many, many years.
Many years.
He just couldn't. We lost somebody, I think it's going on 4 years ago.
Mm. Yeah.
And he was 32, and, you know, he just from when he was young, like your son's addict, he just couldn't beat it.
He was tired. My son was tired.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he tried off and on for all those years, and he just couldn't. He just couldn't do it. I'm not even sure if he knew how to live sober.
Right.
So when he OD'd, he was in the hospital for 9 days in a coma, and I had to make that decision. And
that's a hard decision.
But I know that if he woke up, he would have been right back out using.
I hear you.
That helps me a little bit knowing at least he's at peace now. And my mom died like 5 weeks before that.
So
I feel better knowing that, you know, if I can't have him here, at least she can have him.
No. Absolutely.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts, Kath? Nancy, any other thoughts you want to bring up?
Thank you so much for sharing. No? Yeah. No?
Thank you. And you can stay there, and if you think of something, chime in. Anybody over here in the peanut gallery could chime in anytime.
Does anybody want to come up and add some of their resources? They're thinking about it.
No, I'm not doing it, they say. Okay. Well, what I think of, now that we talked about boundaries, we talked about life experiences and pain come with us, setting healthy boundaries, we think about when we're losing control. Mm-hmm. Control is a big issue. Control is a big issue with codependence. Control is a big issue with addicts. And it's interesting because neither one is in control, but their battle is to be in control.
Mm-hmm.
The codependent's trying to control the addict, trying to control their world, maybe try to live up to that hope bit and that unrealistic image, and they kind of control people, events.
Well, the whole thing about a codependent thinking that they can control everything is they've definitely moved themselves into the higher power spot. And think that they just think that for some reason they're the ones who can solve all the problems. And yet, you know, over and over and over, they keep trying the same thing over and over. And their addict is still an addict. And it's not getting better. So at a certain point, you have to realize, okay, maybe I have to get out of the way. Or maybe what I think is the right thing to do isn't, yeah. and you just yeah. have to step aside.
The probably one of the worst things you can have is a codependent who is armed with knowledge.
That's
because
true.
If they have some knowledge of
that's
recovery,
that's true.
Then they're going to use it
yep.
for themselves yep. to again control everything.
Yeah,
I'll give you a good example. I one time was talking to a feller. Actually, it was a pastor, and I was telling him about. A lot of times when I work with an addict, I'll say, okay, let's talk a little bit about strategy. And I said, I'm going to make some recommendations to you, but you need to pray about it. So I'll say, you could go to rehab detox. You can go to church, talk to your pastor, your synagogue. You could turn around and put a team around you, which Beth mentioned earlier, put a team structure around. And I'm listing off all these options.
Mm-hmm.
And the pastor kind of challenged me and said, yeah. What do you think the higher power is going to want to do in that person's life? Because you're still trying to control.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that, mm-hmm. that goes in the face of it because I do want them to get into rehab and recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But we're trying to, we're telling them the solution,
mm-hmm.
you know, mm-hmm. and I think
when it's really their journey and their solution will come to them,
yeah.
you know, at a certain point.
Now, there's a fellow I was working with in prison. Again, he says, man, my life's been changed forever. And Dana, come on in. And this addict was saying to me, Bill, I never liked, every time I talked to you, you would say, pray about it. And I'd yeah. start off with pray about it. Only because, remember, step one is coming to believe in a power outside mm-hmm. of ourselves. So,
right.
I said, yeah, you got to pray about it because I'll tell you why. In our humanness, we could come up with 100 different scenarios. Mm-hmm. Right now, we could sit around and just say, well, I would think you got to go do this. And I think you need to do this. You mm-hmm. see what I'm saying? We could sit here and come up with a dozen different strategies, ideas, and mm-hmm. concepts. And mm-hmm. we're saying to the higher power, what do you need to do in this addict's life? So control
life.
Is a big issue and letting go of control and yet set healthy boundaries.
Yeah.
We're going to
yeah.
leave it there because we're down at like 15 minutes and we got to start a show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yes,
Dana,
we interviewed
you
your mom a couple minutes ago, which was wonderful.
Yes,
you know?
Nancy,
so,
you.
That's your son's little one. And what's
okay.
her name?
Joella.
Hi, Joella. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
All right. So, Dana, you mentioned to me you've been in sobriety for 14 months?
A little under 14 months, yes.
Under 14?
My sobriety date is October 16th of 2015.
And I said, okay. So I said, that actually puts you through one holiday already. So you've already went through one holiday season early on in your recovery.
Yes. Yeah, a couple
Do you have
months.
Any memories of that time and where you were at? And some
pain.
Of your, pain.
A lot of pain. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had lost my brother 6 months earlier, and being new into recovery, I was just adjusting to those hands that were reaching out
mm-hmm.
to me.
Yeah.
You know, and it took a lot of willingness to actually allow those hands to reach out to me and help me.
What made you willing? Why did you accept it?
Yeah, because here, you know, you lost your brother. You know, that would be a really good excuse to go ahead and just keep using and... The pain would be so horrible.
I was in recovery during my brother's overdose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was at that time that the pain was just too great. And I thought it would be a great idea to cover that pain up by
Absolutely.
Picking up again.
Yep.
So
yep.
What was different?
Understandable.
Yeah.
Yes and no, because mm-hmm. being in sobriety and recovery mm-hmm. previous to, I knew that there were people there that would have helped me.
Very
and,
good.
The seed had already been planted.
It's very good.
I just didn't care about myself enough at the time
mm-hmm.
Or really mm-hmm. have the will to live, because this time when I had went back out, mm-hmm. I just plain and simple was doing what I was doing because I too wanted to die.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now that you
yes.
look back... Have you been blessed by staying
Absolutely.
Here?
Absolutely.
I guess if I was asked your niece, she can't really speak for her. Do you think she would be blessed that you're still here?
Absolutely. As would my son.
And your
son?
Kobe.
Hi,
What's
Kobe.
Hi. How you doing, Kobe? You're happy she's still here? So
Definitely.
Are we. So are we. And I want the addicts to hear that out there.
Yeah.
Because you're right. We come to a very dark place. And they got to hear this. You come to a very dark place. I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm. And is that what happened to you? Did you try did you try to kill yourself, or you just didn't care?
It came
or?
To a point where I took some things I'd never taken before, with the intentions of not waking up. Mm-hmm. I asked God to remove my pain. That's my last memory. And when I woke up and realized that I was awake, I got on my knees immediately and thanked God, because for me, I knew that He had a bigger plan for me. And I knew that because of the things that I was taught in recovery prior to, you know, God's will, not mine, and definitely wasn't His will.
So you were able to grasp back a hold of what you had learned before in your recovery.
Actually Cash Street, where my home group meets, and I didn't leave for quite some time.
Wow.
So I want the addicts out there to hear this as you come to that dark place. I guess I would be able to say, tell me if I'm wrong, you would have regretted it. You'd been gone, but you know what I'm saying? You look back now and say, if I was successful and I was still alive or something, I'd have regretted it.
Absolutely.
Nancy said she regretted a few things in her life. Mm-hmm. I want the addict out there and say, you will regret it. So right now, if you're in the midst of darkness and you're saying life sucks, life may suck, there is hope. Mm-hmm. We can turn the corner. You can say, I'm not going to take my life. Let me go to the people who've been offering me help. Let me go talk to them. Let me go talk to somebody. Let me go to a program. Somebody reach out. And I believe, number one, reach out to God and say, God, you got to take control
number
here. You
got
to lead. When I came to that place, I was sniffing paint down in the woods as a kid. And I tripped a trip that an angel was talking in God's ear and says, God wants to know if you love Him. Now, my life was screwed up. I mean, I was in hell. My brother said, you're going to get killed, because I was breaking in a house and somebody's going to pop me. He said, somebody's going to pop you. And I remember saying to the angel, I do love God. And I put the paint down and everything. And I went home that day and I stood on my porch, and this is what I prayed. I said, God, my life is over. Mm-hmm. Bill Bean ceases to exist, because I have taken my life in the short span that I lived and I brought it to the precipice of death. So in that quick, I've destroyed what you had given me. At this point, I surrender. I completely quit. Bill Beans is dead. Figuratively dead. You now take control. From that moment on, doors began to open. Things began to happen. So that's what I'm encouraging the addict to do out there, is just to just turn around and say, I'm done. Mm-hmm. I'm dead. The old Dana's dead. The old Bill Beans dead.
Gone.
So, yeah. So now, you know, in light of the fact that you relapsed and your brother died and now you're back again, it's like, how do you feel about your sobriety going forward? Like, do you have a new hope? Do you have a new, like, how do you feel? And how
grateful.
Do you deal? You do? You feel grateful?
I live in gratitude.
Amazing.
I by no means stay sober for anybody else today but myself.
And that's very important.
But
yes.
I also do it in His memory. So he won't
yes. Yes. So you're living for both of yous right now a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, this is by far something that I can do by myself. This is a we program, you know, and we can recover.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Even with the little bit of hope, the tiniest bit of willingness, you know, we can and we do recover one day at a time. Following those suggestions, you know, that are brought upon us. You know, today I can put my hand out to another struggling alcoholic or addict, just as those women still hold their hand out to me, because, like, again, I can't do this on my own.
Yes.
On a daily basis. Yeah. On a daily basis, I need my God and my network.
Mm-hmm. So important.
Yeah,
it's so important.
And you hear what Dana's saying here is that she has her network. You need to, you know, like I said, if you're at that precipice, you need to reach out to somebody. That's the beginning. First God.
Absolutely.
And then reach out to somebody, because you're saying, because Dana, now you're an inspiration. I've been there. Mm-hmm. I've been in the hell. I know where you're at. Come on. Your darkness can't be any darker than my darkness. Darkness is darkness. I'm sitting there. Life is so you can't tell and say, oh, you don't understand. No, I understand. And I've been saved. I've come out of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
and I know that there's people listening right now that probably know exactly how we feel and can identify with that feeling.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And for those listeners, like, there is hope. There is hope.
With the holidays, like, what are some tips that, you know, you would like to give our audience about as an addict and recovery?
Again,
how
remember
do
that
you
first holiday
how do you
and this
get
one?
Through the holidays, you know? What are some things you do?
I pray a lot.
That's okay. Really good.
I pray a lot. I keep myself in the center of my program. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not just one unity recovery and service. That's
so you don't about. Like use the holiday as an excuse to kind of, you know, let your recovery kind of go by the wayside for a couple of days. You keep it forefront and that's it right there.
Yeah, keep working it.
Yeah.
Season to give back what has been freely given to me. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. there are a lot of people struggling and a lot of people who use that excuse, but it's the holidays and you don't understand.
Yeah.
The heck if I don't understand, you know, and for those people, I am right there. Yeah. You know, I am a part of service, a great part of service. And, you know, it doesn't only help me, but it helps them as well.
I mean, that's the theme that we've been hearing, you know, from Beth earlier and from her and from her.
Yeah,
is the whole avenue of whatever we've been given, we now give forward.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
And that's how it works, right?
That's how it works.
And that's the program. And
because if there was nobody there before us, where would we be? We would still be in
absolutely.
That hell. We would still be in that darkness,
absolutely.
Feeling like there's no way out.
I think it's amazing, you know, because sometimes when you hear, well, you know, we're really in this world to help other people, you know, and sometimes in our selfishness, we're like, I don't really want to. And yet, you know, when you start doing it and you see that it not only helps the other person, but you're the most blessed. You're the most blessed because you're giving to other people. And that's what God had in mind to start with.
It does. It does strengthen you because when you work the program, you know the program, it strengthens you because you're going over it over your head. You see what I'm saying? So you're going over as you're helping that person, and you help the next person, you're going over it in your head. It's becoming stronger and stronger and stronger in your head.
And I also want to, you know, do a shout out to you for, you know, being a mom and setting this example for your children. I mean, you know, that is so awesome. And and you're going to help the next generation and not let that pattern go down.
Yeah, my program shows within my son on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the and living amends that I
You are given such a gift to your children. It's such a gift to
and
them.
I like that thought you just said.
You it's break such a gift.
That history.
Yep.
It's broken. Yep. It's broken. Now we write a new history.
Because it's obvious obvious that addiction runs in your family.
Yes.
And so, you know, for you to be breaking that here and with your mom and, you know, you're just going to go forward now and help others and your family. So
we're down to five. Dana, thank you very much.
Yeah,
I just want to recap
so
some stuff. I want to throw out a few things here in the last 5 minutes. I'm going to throw out some stuff you haven't heard because we didn't get to go over it. Suicide drops off during the holidays. It does. It actually does drop off during the holidays and picks up in January. A lot of people think the suicides are the highest during the holidays. It is not. Mm-hmm. It is in January. So keep your eyes open coming January. Start talking to safe people in your circle about the truth of who you are and what's going on in your life. Create a safe environment, that network that is true, honest people that can don't have to fix you. Don't have to fix you, but be a part of it. Take a few minutes to reflect on what your family is or isn't, a reality check. Then prepare yourself to accept them for who they are. Plan ahead by creating a list of unacceptable behaviors. So when you're going to go be in a Christmas party, host a Christmas party, or go to a Christmas party, what is acceptable or unacceptable? As somebody, Beth was saying earlier, have your phone, you could leave, have a car ready, have a drink in your hand. Non-alcoholic drink in your hand. Determine and set your boundaries and consequences in relationship to the unacceptable behaviors that you determine in your family, in your household. And this all should be thought about ahead of time. If you're going to host a party, you know your family has alcoholism and addiction in it, and they're going to be coming over. You have to determine what's unacceptable ahead of time, and therefore you're going to take action, set boundaries on that. Tell your loved ones what these boundaries are and consequences. Hey, son, you come home, you know, tripping up the doorstep and in the front door. I'm just going to let you know you're not going to be invited. Love you, but you're not going to be invited. Prepare and develop strategies that will enable you to take care of yourself. Under a spiritual concept, understand and accept justice and boundaries go hand in hand with mercy and grace. The addict. For the addict, plan ahead. Talk to a sponsor or therapist about what you are working on. And what's your recovery plan for being in that holiday environment? Make a list of things you are thankful for.
That's what she said, gratitude.
Gratitude. Mm-hmm. I just posted out a speech I gave at a church 2 weeks ago about thanks. You'd be very surprised about thanks. Thanks in a biblical sense is nothing to do about what we receive. Thanks is really about who God is. So check that out. That's on our website. Exercise, relax, meditate, get yourself centered. Watch your intake of caffeine, sugar, and nicotine because they could hype you out. Remember, resentment is number one cause of failed sobriety. Mm-hmm. A lot of us look at life and blame my parents, blame life, blame work. And that resentment of life is the number one cause for failure sobriety. We're going to have to end it there. I'm sorry, we could keep talking all day. We could keep coming up with other topics to talk about. I hope you've enjoyed the show today. Yeah. Thank you
thanks for
coming
in. Peanut
Gallery, I'll say there.
And thanks for everybody
Nancy,
that interviewed.
Beth, yeah. Dana, thank you very much for joining us. Ben, you're out there. You're listening to this. Thank you, Ben.
He's cute, yep.
Everybody, this is Bill. This is Kathy signing off. You
Merry Christmas,
holiday.
Everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
I hope you enjoy.
All right, you chipmunks. Ready to sing your song?
I'll say we are. Yeah, let's sing it now.
Okay, Simon.
Okay.
Okay, Theodore.
Okay.
Okay, Alvin. Alvin. Alvin!
Okay!
Okay, fellas, get ready. That was very good, Simon.
Naturally.
Very good, Theodore. Alvin, you were a little flat. Watch it, Alvin. Let's not overdo it.
Now,
wait a minute. Now, wait. Theodore, just a minute. Simon, will you put that...